After a year in which her campus was often in the media spotlight, University of Wisconsin-Madison Chancellor Rebecca Blank spoke with Inside Higher Ed's editors and reporters about tenure, public university finances, and the racial climate on college campuses, among other topics. Excerpts of the conversation follow.
Obviously, Wisconsin's been in the news nonstop.
Yeah.
And we've written about a lot of the developments along the way.
Yeah.
As you look at where you are, where you're headed, what's the big picture about Madison?
Yeah,
right
so
now?
You know, let me say a few things just as background, and then I know we're gonna come back and talk about budgets and talk about tenure and all that. But so we were in the news a lot this spring. I think a good part of that was simply being caught up in presidential primary politics, which, you know, is never where you want to be in any case. And I thought there was a lot of publicity that wasn't fair. I mean, there were a number of places where we got headlines saying, you know, tenure abolished at University of Wisconsin, which is just wrong. You know, we clearly have some what I call brand recovery that we need to do. But having said all that, I've been at the university now 2.5 years, and I have to say I find this place an incredibly exciting place to be. I went there because it's one of the top publics, and I have found it to be, you know, having been at a good number of other public universities over my life. You know, we continue every year to have record increases in applications. Very, very strong school on that front. We have had steady for the last 7 years increases in both retention and graduation rates. We're well above our peers on that front. And a report came out yesterday showing what we know, but always sounds more credible when someone else says it, that the gap between our underrepresented groups and our white students has been closing steadily on graduation, and retention it's closed entirely, which, you know, we're at 90, essentially, I think it's 95.8, 96% retention rates, which is right up there with a lot of small privates, right? So, you know, as an educational experience, we're doing really well, and I have to say, I went to big public universities. I believe in the breadth and the scope of these things. They're not for everyone, but for those who can navigate that large of a place, the range of educational offerings that we provide is just unparalleled, right? So, you know, if you combine that with what I think are very good, you know, really good outcomes that say we're doing the right thing by our students. So I want to come back and talk about career placement at another time. But, so that's going well. We've obviously had budget challenges. Our budget challenges aren't very different than any other public. Ours were timed a little differently. We got more in the last couple of budget rounds. More people got others earlier. If you look at the aggregate drop in our, you know, share of state funding, it looks over the last 10 years, it looks pretty much identical to everyone else. So, you know, I don't think we're unusual there, say because of the presidential primary politics, we've got a little more attention than we might have otherwise. There's not a public university in the country that's not struggling with the question of how do you fund yourself stably in a world where your primary source of funding has, you know, plummeted over the last 2 to 3 decades. And like everyone else, you know, the answer has to be a little bit of everything. And obviously, we are making the case with the state legislature as strongly as possible. I wish the Wisconsin economy, I wish the U.S. economy overall were stronger because, as you all know, it's always easier to get budget increases when everyone else is doing well, too. We're clearly looking at tuition policy. And as you probably know, the Board of Regents, we have a freeze in in-state undergraduate tuition. We're in our third year of that. We've got a fourth year, at least under the current budget rules. And but we did get permission to raise out-of-state and professional school tuition. And for reasons I don't understand, we had not been doing what we should have on that front. So the story I like to tell is that our professional schools have these tuition rates that are, like, in some cases, the lowest in the country. Our vet med school's tuition, it was cheaper to go out of state to the University of Wisconsin's vet med school than to stay in state at the University of Illinois. Now, that makes no sense, right? And we're actually ranked substantially higher than them. So we've got a ways to push, and I'm an economist. I believe that out-of-state tuition should pretty much be market set. So that has been obviously part of our strategy and response, and the Board of Regents has given us some leeway on that. We have made substantial budget cuts. Again, they came a little later to us than some others, but, you know, we cut $33 million out of our budget this last year. There's another $11 million coming down the line this next year, and some of that is an opportunity to do things you should have done. Some of that is just plain pain, and particularly in our liberal arts college where there's just not a lot of excess. And then the third thing the Board of Regents has given us permission to do, we were one of the very few publics that had a stringent resident, non-resident cap. We were set at 23.5%. and the Board of Regents have, you know, as a policy experiment, given us a four-year waiver on that cap in exchange for us committing to admit a minimum of 3,600 Wisconsin freshmen in every freshman class. Now, 3,600 is about where we've been. It's actually a little above the average of the last 10 years. Wisconsin demographics, like all of the upper Midwest, don't look great. Between 2009, when the number of high school graduates peaked, and 2015, the number of high school graduates fell by 10%. So a world where you have to admit three in-state students for every one out-of-state student, particularly if you're growing, just, you know, it's not just us, but the entire system is struggling with that. So it was primarily for demographics that the Regents lifted the cap. We're the school that's most able to take advantage of that. And, you know, I think we've made a very strong commitment to the people of Wisconsin that even in the face of ongoing declines in high school graduates, we are going to do everything we can to admit no change in our Wisconsin-based students coming into the class. And, of course, that means if the high school numbers continue to decline as over the next 10 years, not quite as fast, but they will continue to decline, you know, we're going to have to work harder to attract top Wisconsin students and keep them in the state. And you want to do that for all sorts of reasons, not the least of which, if your good students stay in the state to college, they're much more likely to stay there to work. So we should be doing this in any case, right? And then lastly, we're doing what every other school is doing. We're really kicking up private fundraising. Wisconsin, I think, is underperformed in this area in the past. We just publicly launched a campaign in October. We've had some real success going into that campaign of a sort that, to be honest, Wisconsin hasn't experienced before, and I think I've got a really great person in charge of the foundation. I've obviously been working hard at that, but so has every dean and department chair. So I'll tell you a story because it was a great opportunity. Two of our best alums, John and Tasha Margridge, and John Margridge was the past president of Cisco, took it from a very small company to a very big company, made a commitment last November. It was our last home football game that we announced, where they had put $100 million on the table as matching funds for faculty chairs. And Mike Knetter, the head of the foundation, and I had a number of conversations with myself and with John. You know, would it take us 2 years? Would it take us 3 years? You know, how long would it take us to close off this match, right? 6 months later, we had to go back to John and Tasha and say, we're at 95% of the match, and we've got 30 active conversations. How do you want to close this off? And John and Tasha, to give them credit, said, and this is very, John is an old salesman, very, you know, excellent. He said, well, let's set a date certain. And whatever you get in the door by that date, we'll match it. If you don't make $100,000, we aren't going to match it. But if you go over, we'll match that. So we set June 8th, which was almost exactly 7 months after we announced this. As of June 8th, we had $125 million in hand. They matched that. So that's $250 million in endowments for new faculty chairs, which for us who had fewer faculty chairs than any other school I know about of our size and scope, huge increase in effect. And at a time where we're facing a lot of outside recruitments, given some of the negative publicity, this is exactly the sort of gift we need to advertise the fact that, you know, Wisconsin is alive and well and keeping its faculty and raising the money needed to do that. So we're in a campaign.
Maybe starting with sort of the role of the health and role of public higher education, because you talked about how important that is to you. And so, Wisconsin, you're doing fundraising, more out-of-state students, things that will work because you're a great, well-known university. But what about sort of the whole system of public higher education? What, are you worried about the state abandoning to other efforts?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm pretty, you know, I get up every morning and I sort of look at my fellow chancellors in the system who basically are fully dependent on tuition and state dollars and saying, thank goodness I'm in Madison and not at River Falls or Stout or Eau Claire. You know, I don't, it's a lot harder for those schools. You know, our biggest source of funding these days is the federal government. Over a third of our budget comes from the federal government. Our second biggest source of funding is tuition. Our third biggest source of funding, I think I've got this right, Meredith, is gifts and grants, which is basically donor gifts as well as non-federal grants. So that's an odd mix. And our fourth source of funding is the state. You know, it's way down there. And I have the ability, because of my growing admissions, my demand from out of state, to do some things. You know, I've got leverage that smaller and less nationally recognized public universities don't have, and I really worry because education, you know, despite what some people will tell you, it will cost money to offer a good education. Those prices, as the price of faculty have gone up, that's 60% of your costs, are going up, and as state funding goes down, something's got to pick up that slack. And the publics have never had the base of financial aid that the privates had because they didn't need to. They had in-state tuition. So you know, one of the real questions in my mind is how much will the alums of some of those schools step up? They don't need to fill the gap as much as I need it, right? But even a 10% filling of the gap with donations and private funding and partnerships with industry, you know, all of those schools are working at those things in a way that mm-hmm. they never did before. And, I agree that that group is at much higher risk mm-hmm. than the schools like Wisconsin and Illinois and Berkeley.
But, do you worry, though, that, I mean, because Wisconsin has this great populist tradition in the state and about higher ed.
Yeah.
And as you admit more mm-hmm. out-of-state students, even if it's a modest increase, I mean, look at California, where they went for that strategy, and now they're getting a lot of pushback.
Or Iowa.
Iowa even worse. How do you keep people feeling this is my university if they see more people?
You know, this is where the declining demographics actually, I think, give us the opportunity to serve the state as fully. If not, we will, in 5 years, be admitting a higher share of in-state high school graduates than we have in 25 years, mm-hmm. right, at the commitment that we have made. So I'm not reducing my commitment to the state of Wisconsin, right? And that to me is highly important. But if I'm growing, I'm growing on the margin mm-hmm. of out-of-state students. And you know, it's very bad for Wisconsin in terms of this demographics and what it means for their workforce. It does create an opportunity for us at this particular moment in time when we're trying to look at other sources of funds.
But does the character of the place change?
You know, it's an interesting question. You know, there are a lot of schools here that now are, you look at the publics, mm-hmm. there are many of them that are 50% out of mm-hmm. state. We have always had a very strong coastal admissions for our out-of-state mm-hmm. students, and obviously we've worked to increase our international admissions. And some of that diversity, I think, is good for a state that, you know, more of our diversity comes from out-of-state than in-state. We're Wisconsin, you know, mm-hmm. it's a white, Norwegian, Scandinavian, mm-hmm. German-settled area, and still looks a lot like that. So there's some educational advantages to increasing diversity. I think it really puts an onus on what do you do to keep yourself closely tied to the state. And, you know, as you all know from last year's controversy, we have this phrase that's been around for more than 100 years now called the Wisconsin idea that we like to claim as our own. And I've been at a good number of publics. They all give lip service to outreach. I've never been at a place that does outreach as much as Wisconsin does, and in the state with that commitment. And we have to maintain that. If we don't maintain that and we don't maintain strong ties to the businesses in the state and admit the sort of students we're admitting, then I think we're in trouble. But if we do that, I would like to believe I could move from 23.5% to, making mm-hmm. this up over, say, in the next 10 years, 35%. And
several years ago, there was a lot of tension within Wisconsin about mm-hmm. Madison's relative role vis-a-vis the rest of the system. Mm-hmm. And do you feel that, you referred to the Madison's preferred position vis-a-vis the others. Do you envision, has that largely passed? Do you envision Madison's being a fundamental part of the system for the
obviously that was one of my predecessors who tried to take Wisconsin's system. And, I will say this, and I've said this publicly in a number of cases, including to Ray Cross, the head of the mm-hmm. system, and others. You know, being in the system as a flagship is a problem, right? There's just things that get imposed on you, the stuff you got to do. You know, you're always arguing, saying, no, you can't do that. That doesn't make any sense for us. A lot of times the system doesn't get the research university because we're the only ones outside of some work in Milwaukee that, mm-hmm. that quite does that. On the other hand, what the system does in the state of Wisconsin, and this is worth everything, is that there is a single unified budget request to the legislature, right? And I am not out there fighting with Eau Claire mm-hmm. and La Crosse and Stout and Milwaukee for my share of the dollars because that would be a disaster. And I look back at that effort to bring the University of Wisconsin at Madison into its own separate public authority, which meant it would have to be funded independently of the rest mm-hmm. of the system. And then you look what happened in the state of Wisconsin in the next 5 years politically, mm-hmm. right? Wisconsin, we would have had double the decline mm-hmm. in our state funding than what mm-hmm. we got mm-hmm. had we been independent. So I have no mm-hmm. problems being part of this mm-hmm. system as much as on a day-to-day basis I'm always calling up Ray Cross mm-hmm. and saying, mm-hmm. you can't do this to us.
Mm-hmm. So tenure, and you said mm-hmm. you are aware of misconceptions. Mm-hmm. What do you think is significantly changed? What didn't mm-hmm. change? And how do you view the current discussions about what the new policies should be?
So let me just sort of lay out. So we were really unusual in that all the tenure stuff was written into state statute in Wisconsin happened when we became a system in the early 1970s. And there were a lot of faculty who really took that as meaning we had stronger tenure and were more serious about it than anyone else. You know, I admit I came in from out of state and I thought, it's in state statute. Like, you know, that's a bad thing. You know, that's subject to the whims mm-hmm. of the political discussion. You know, and sure enough, I mean, it was part of this budget. You know, clearly there were some bad feelings going around. And, you know, this is a very conservative Republican legislature in both houses right now. And, you know, towards the end of the budget process, they did two things. They first of all removed the tenure statute from the and expected the regents to take this up. And you know, before the budget was finalized, which was when those things would have come out of statute, the regents passed essentially identical statutes that then went into so we are now the equivalent of every other public university. We have tenure established in statute rather than in state law. So that really wasn't a problem, though. That caused upset, and I understand why, and it was a change, and people, mm-hmm. you know, many people are not happy about it. The other thing the state legislature did is because you now had, you know, we are all state employees, we're a state agency with the way we're currently constituted. They had a scoop of state employees because they'd removed tenure who weren't covered by any other state employment statutes. So they took the state employment statutes for the staff and dumped them into the budget for tenured faculty. And they didn't consult with anyone that I know of about that. And of course, the statutes for staff are not appropriate for faculty because it had provisions for firing that, you know, were broader than you'd ever really want to use with tenured faculty. So that's what caused the real firestorm this summer. Our faculty over the summer put together a proposed policy for Madison, which the Faculty Senate, after two readings, passed in November, that is our proposed statutes as to how we will take the authority that the state has potentially given us with regard to how you deal with tenured faculty when changes occur in programs. And essentially what it is fully consistent with our peers. It says that the only time in which this raises a question is if a program is discontinued. If that program is discontinued, then you go through a whole series of a process by which you take every step possible before you'd actually start considering, including moving your faculty into other units and all of that. So the appropriate statute for Madison. So we moved forward with that because we had to. And the system, meanwhile, moved a little more slowly. They created a tenure task force, and this is, of course, the system moved more slowly. There are a lot more stakeholders there and a much broader mix of schools. And they decided towards the middle of the fall that they wanted to pass a broad statute at the regent level before they approved any individual changes to faculty policies and procedures on any one campus. So I admit I was originally hoping that we would pass this, it would go to the regents, we'd get it through the regents, we'd be done with it before the end of the year when I go into hiring season, right? That's not going to happen. The regents are going through this whole discussion of tenure, and they're going to pass a policy. You know, I very much hope, I can't guarantee this. It wasn't even a draft policy. It was a set of bullet points about what we want that had some things in it that were concerning, but they hadn't even written the thing yet, right? So they've gotten a lot of feedback. I've certainly talked extensively with some of the system leadership. I continue to be cautiously optimistic that the system is going to pass a broad policy, which will then allow them to adopt the policy that our faculty have passed last November, basically as the faculty passed it. We'll see. If that doesn't happen, we're going to have another firestorm on my camp.
There's obviously been lots of talk about flight from Madison, and I mean, have you found would you describe that landscape?
So I will tell you right now that we have had far more outside offers coming at us by orders of, from what I can see, it's early yet, right? It's still the end of November, than we have experienced at any time, and we're keeping track of this, and we'll put numbers out by the end of the year, I promise you, for a whole variety of reasons, not for you, but for the state. No. But you can use them. We have not had anything like the number of departures relative to our
You've been under Madison's been under. I mean, a lot of the big publics have been under pretty good attack, or not attack, but people have been going after their people for a while.
Our liberal arts college has something like 35 open offers. They had, I think, 20 last year in total. Right at this point, they have 34. 18, I believe it's something. I'm not these numbers. Don't use them without something like 18 or 19 of them are settled. And I think we've lost one or two people out of that. We had a university come at our political science department and make an offer to all of our senior international political scientists en masse. They didn't post jobs. They didn't do interviews. They just came in and made them. Mm-hmm. And we're keeping all of them, mm-hmm. right? You know, and, you know, we've had someone who had an offer as to a major offer at the Harvard Medical School. Mm-hmm. They're staying. You know, so I've actually been very pleased with what we're doing. And you know, it won't surprise you, it is a very high priority for me to make sure that those retentions are successful. Mm-hmm. You know, if we're going to retain who we are and stop this as quickly as possible, mm-hmm. we are going to be successful in these retentions. And so far, we've been able to accomplish that, but the year is early, and there's still a lot of open mm-hmm. retentions, and I'm sure there are more to come.
Mm-hmm. As you look yeah. at things through an economic yeah. and public yeah. policy prism, yeah. what do you think of the yeah. Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders plans to make public higher education tuition free or debt free, and give a lot more money to the states for public higher ed?
I guess I have two reactions to it. One is that I just don't see how that's financed in a world where, you know, someone has to pay the bill. Mm-hmm. And in a world where public support for education has been going the other direction for years, and I don't see any trends that are going to free up more public money, that to me makes this a very high hurdle. Wait, you know, if you're going to talk about reform in higher education, that probably wouldn't be the first one I'd discuss, though I understand mm-hmm. the political advantages of it. My second concern is that the issue here is not that education is too expensive. The issue is that education is too expensive for some students, right? We do have, as we all know, a rapidly, you know, a growing group of really high-income people. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't get free education, right? Mm-hmm. You know, an education, as a classic economic statement, is a combination of both private investment and public good. And those who could afford the private investment, who are often the ones who are going to gain some of the most out of this, should make it, right? But as a society, the public good aspect dominates for those who couldn't afford this on their own, but who over time really would be able to come out and repay it. And, you know, we can come back and talk about how should you do student loans and student debt and how do you get financial aid together, but I guess I don't see the advantage in a world where public funds are extremely tight of discussing free public education for all, when I think what we should be talking about is access and, you know, you saw the report coming out, just literally encouragement of large numbers of people who look at these price tags and think it's not for mm-hmm. me. And it's more than just a price tag. There's a lot of other things go into that, but that's one of them. And that should be where the focus is, not on providing free education for everyone.
So if by some political miracle yeah. it passed and Governor Walker called you and said, hey, should Wisconsin join?
Well, I would say to him, is the state going to pony up the dollars this requires?
What do you make of the series of protests over racial conditions on campuses that have yeah. taken off over the last month?
Yeah, well, you know, I can speak to our campus, right, as to why did this happen. And, you know, last year, there were a variety of protests around racial justice mm-hmm. issues, post-Ferguson, and Madison actually had a shooting of a young black man. Mm-hmm. And so we saw a coming together, I've never seen this before, of the community and the campus with a set of concerns and protests that very much focused on city, and it was very non-campus mm-hmm. focused, but there were a lot of campus people involved in mm-hmm. it, right? So that created an organizational structure around issues particularly focused on race, even though it was criminal justice, that was ready mm-hmm. to activate itself mm-hmm. when another set of race-based issues came up. So
more focused on
yes,
the campus.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so you know, you sort of had the group already right. there, mm-hmm. and it wasn't like if you're going to go down talking about racial justice, these are our students, they're smart people, they're thinking about what does this mean on campus mm-hmm. as well, right? And it's not surprising the conversation very quickly, and we stimulated them by something, you know, not just Missouri, but the conversation also evolves into what's happening on campus. And, you know, these are good conversations to have, they're important conversations to have. You know, I always like seeing students seriously involved in issues of this sort, even though it's sometimes trying from the chancellor's mm-hmm. point of view. And Lord knows, there's not an institution in America for which these, and you know, why is it that these things are always so intense on college? Because we are a community where people live. It's not just you go to work and you go home. It's like, this is both work and home. And so it's really intense for people when they feel alienation and disrespect and, you know, in this worst case is outright racism in their home community of the way that a college campus is. So, you know, these are good discussions to have. Some of these demands are things that campuses need to spend time on. Everyone who's ever worked on diversity issues knows how hard this is. It's not an answer. It is a process. You work on it again and again every day, and you can never assume you've now done it, right? And particularly in a state like Wisconsin, with our racial makeup, it's harder for us than it is for Texas or Florida or California. And I know that. And you know, it's part of the student, to the extent this generates useful motivation and change inside across the institution. I'm not just talking about student issues, but staff and faculty issues as well. That's a good thing. It's going to be a hard thing, and it's a hard thing when you've got these protests going on. But at the end of the day, we are not a post-racial America yet.